TexasObserver.org, you're listening to Observer Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan McNamara. This is a half-hour news show in which we ask the Texas Observer staff to take a break from writing to say things to you on the radio instead. Back in the studio with us this week is Observer staff writer Patrick Michaels. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Jonathan.
And also with us is politics writer Chris Hooks. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jonathan.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by author and UFO researcher Noe Torres to discuss the Del Rio UFO Festival and how Texas border towns are drawing tourists by capitalizing on a string of long-forgotten UFO crash sites along the Rio Grande. But before we get to that, we have some news to discuss. The state Republican convention is now behind us, but we're still feeling some of the effects of last weekend. Perhaps most notably, several key politicians in the GOP spoke out against gay rights during the convention. And here to help us discuss this is the VP of Dallas-based Metroplex Republicans, Rudy Eftering. Rudy, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me with you.
Chris Hooks was actually on the ground last weekend at the convention. Chris, can you give us a little bit of a rundown on this story?
Sure. Well, every 2 years, the Texas Republican Party gets together with a lot of their delegates and base and supporters and try to work out a statement of shared principles to carry the party forward for another 2 years, the platform. The people that come to work out the platform are not, your typical Republicans. They're the people who are most passionate supporters of the party, activists.
These are like the Wikipedia editors of the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
Okay, got it.
And there was a lot of debate this year over a couple of topics that affect people see as the Republican Party's ability to reach out to new voters and to kind of adjust the party for the future. The primary one was immigration. There was a lot of debate about that. Mm-hmm. But there was this a subplot at the convention, and by subplot I don't mean to minimize it, but there was a debate over how the party should relate to gay Texans.
Right.
How they should talk about them, treat them. In a lot of parts of the country, Republican parties, state Republican parties and Republicans are kind of figuring out how to talk about this issue in a way that makes it clear that they understand the debate is heading in one direction. And that is absolutely not the case in Texas.
Right.
A federal judge ruled earlier this year that Texas' ban on gay marriage, a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage, was unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And so there's the possibility that by the time the Republican Party gets together 2 years from now, gay marriage could be legal in Texas. There's been blowback, I guess, amongst a lot of the Republican Party on these issues. And there really seems to be kind of no sign that the party is open to changing their position. So in their platform, they took out one or two measures, some language that had been in the platform for a while about how homosexuality was detrimental to society, tears mm-hmm. apart the fabric of society. But they put in another provision at the behest of Kathy Adams, who runs at the Texas Eagle Forum, endorsing what's known as reparative therapy, mm-hmm. the practice of trying to train gay people to not be gay anymore. And Rudy, I was hoping that maybe you could tell us a little bit about what reparative therapy is and what they're actually, what the Republican Party is actually endorsing with that platform plank.
Well, let me tell you, to demonstrate the ridiculousness of it, I went Monday morning after the convention to the Dallas County Clerk's office and opened up my own reparative therapy business. Now, it's a satire, of course, but it's really not funny because endorsing, and that's what they did, endorsed reparative therapy. They say that they were simply trying to preserve the ability of people to do it. But if you read the language, it says we acknowledge the effectiveness of reparative therapy, which every professional organization that exists says it's unethical. We told them this. So to demonstrate how easy it is to become a reparative therapist, I now have an officially registered reparative therapy business called Nomo Homo Reparative Therapy. And this is an actual business that I started. Of course, I'm not going to take anybody's money, but the point was to demonstrate how utterly ridiculous it was. But let me tell you what we did for the very first time in any Texas Republican Party convention. We made our presence known. We've been quiet because we knew that the issue was a loser for the was a issue that was not going to get the Republicans votes if they changed it. But now the issue has turned into a loser for the Republican Party. And we were there to tell people that for the very first time, this issue is going to lose the Republican Party votes. Now, the activists on the ground weren't getting the message. And we warned the party chairman, we warned the leadership of the party, that if they left reparative therapy in the platform, it would be the number one story coming out of the convention. But we had no idea that it would blow up internationally like it has.
So what actually is reparative therapy? What are the methods?
Well, the way they explained this to you, you're going to have to ask now, because every piece of literature that we could find said that it was some sort of 1950s style. You know, some of it's that you look at gay porn and they shock you, and then you look at straight porn and they give you a cookie. I don't know. I mean, there's this one guy in North Texas that says that he's changing people from gay to straight. It's just such a disreputable business that we're trying to demonstrate how absurd it is. But the very point of the matter is that this is becoming a losing issue for Republicans. And the Texas Republican Party, well, I think they're starting to get it after the terrible publicity backlash that they've gotten over this. Even Republicans are shaking their heads about how the heck that got in the party platform. But by the way, you may not know this, but there are 250 policy positions in the Texas Republican Party platform talking about incidental things like light bulbs, how often you should water your lawn, and even there's a single platform plank about a plaque in Austin with 8 screws in it. And the platform process is completely out of control. And what we're going to attempt to do is to get rid of all this 250 policy statements and get down to a core set of principles that we can agree on and avoid these embarrassing backlashes when we put silliness like reparative therapy in the party platform.
Although this platform plank was important to a lot of people. You walk around the convention and there are people that feel very passionately about its inclusion, right? So do you think when you come back to the convention next time that there's going to be a way to get rid of some of these issues?
Well, what the recommendation we made to them is this, and is that in much of the literature I read, coming from the American Psychiatric Association, they say basically it's not therapy, but what it is religious counseling. So I went to the chairman of the subcommittee, and I'll give her credit. She did try to change this. I said, if you call it religious counseling, there's not going to be this blowback that you're going to get, because all you're doing is defending religious counseling. Fine with me. You want to try not to be gay, and if your faith system tells you not to participate in that behavior, and as a matter of faith you do that, more power to you. But to call it a reputable therapy that actually changes people from gay to straight was a huge political error. But if we go back to the convention next year, maybe they'll listen to us and change that terminology from reparative therapy is simply religious counseling, which is exactly what it is.
So, Rudy, you were also, you used to be the president of the Texas Association of Businesses?
Yeah, I was the first openly gay chairman of one of the most conservative organizations in the state. And this says something for the business community. If you remember back in the 70s when the business community was the first group of people to realize that gay people had money to spend and started doing targeted advertising toward the gay and lesbian community. So, For culturally, this is the first issue where the business community has been way ahead of the culture at large. If you look at the large corporations that have pro-equality policies in their employment practices, I think that's a very good example.
So one of the interesting things about the convention this year was you have this kind of new generation of Republican nominees for state office who belong to kind of the Christian right in a way that the previous generation might not have. So you have people like Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton coming up.
Yeah, we'll see how that pans out. I mean, I think that what the party has got to do is to start appealing to a broader range of voters for the past 30 years, the social conservatives have had a headlock on the Republican Party in Texas. They simply have to have. And the business community is starting to get very, even the business community is starting to question if some of the positions, for example, on immigration. There are some common sense. As a matter of fact, we led the group called Employers for Immigration Reform. And there were some common sense immigration solutions we were looking for. We have gotten nowhere with that. So you are correct. The social conservatives, or I would say a combination of the Tea Party, you know, tired of big government, libertarian wing, along with the social conservatives. As a matter of fact, there are some data out there that the social conservatives had more to do with nominating Dan Patrick than did any other single group of people. So the dynamics at play, but there's no doubt that the party, if it's going to continue to hold statewide offices, is going to have to start appealing to a wider range of voters. There's just no two ways about it. Every demographer you talk to tells you that things are going to change. I mean, the white middle, you know, the Anglo aging core of the party cannot sustain the statewide election wins. Go ahead.
Oh, Chris, to your point, I think you were talking about how the party may already be shifting. Am I right?
Well, it's it's hard for me to look at what the party will be like under the next couple of years, I guess, under Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton and these people who are already maybe, you know, the most significant force of the convention this year. And it's hard for me to see the party finding room to change. I mean, are you optimistic about the kind of change that you're talking about?
Yeah, let me tell you what we did. I can't remember their names. I had them written down a moment ago. But the gay couple that was going to – the gay couple that filed the case – and is the subject of Mark Ferris, I think his name was one of them. Is that correct?
Yeah.
The gay couple that filed the case that's now moving ahead in the appeals court for gay marriage in Texas. There was actually a group called the Republican Liberty Caucus that, because the gay Republicans were rejected, invited us to join them at their rally at the same time that Steve Hotze and his anti-gay marriage rally was going on. As a matter of fact, we had an incident where the gay Republicans were meeting in a restaurant. Steve Hotze and his crowd came in and sat down right at the next table. My group, a lot of them didn't recognize, so I got up and introduced myself and then saved till the very last, "By the way, we're the gay Republicans." He threw his hands in the air and started praying to God to save our souls. It was one of the most surreal experiences I've ever had in my life.
Did it work?
But well, I don't know. We will find out. But the point is that there is a very large faction within the party that is just sick of the social conservatives and their anti-gay rhetoric, and they are beginning to push back. The gay couple that we had invited to join us, one of them got sick, so they couldn't come. But we were going to be having dinner in the Omni Hotel with this couple, alert the media that this couple was there having a quiet dinner with some gay Republican, other gay Republican couples, while Dr. Hotze was having his anti-gay marriage going on. The general manager of the hotel put a kibosh on that. He wouldn't let us do it, but we thought it would be great media theater if we were able to pull it off, but didn't get a chance to do it. But we do have allies within the party, and we do sense, particularly among young Republicans and college Republicans, you may see us come out in the next few weeks with some very strong statements about that language in the party platform.
Mr. Eftering, it's my understanding that the Texas Democrats have offered you a space at their upcoming convention. I was wondering if you're going to go.
Well, you know, actually we talked about that and thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if we actually tried to recruit Republicans with the Democrat Party? But we, you know, the thing that turned us against it was that we get accused of being Democrats all the time anyway. So if we'd showed up at the Democrat Party platform, all of our opponents on the other side would simply be pointing at us going, "See, all they are is Democrats." So that was a kind gesture on their part, but We're going to stay with the Republican Party and try to make it better, and we hope our Democrat friends stay in the Democrat Party and try to make it better.
So I guess there will be some people listening who are wondering, why be a gay Republican? Why is it important for you to stay with the party and change?
That's an easy question for me to answer. I grew up extremely poor. The free enterprise system allowed me a pathway to escape poverty. Now, I've heard arguments on both sides, but in my mind, the Republican Party is the more free enterprise-oriented party that gives people an opportunity to pull themselves up. And so because of that, and that's why I invested so much of my time and treasure and energy into the Texas Association of Business, because I moved to Texas with nothing. Nothing but enough money to get into my car here, and built a very successful business. So that's why I'm Republican, and those are the winning issues for us. Those are the issues that help us win elections. These divisive issues like reparative therapy only drive voters away, and we're hoping for a day when we can just emphasize the issues that win us elections, rather than stepping on these rakes like our dear governor did yesterday. I appreciate what Rick Perry's done as governor, but boy, oh boy, can he step on the rake sometime. There were audible gasps in the room when he gave that answer about equating homosexuality with alcoholism. And he was before a conservative crowd. So I can't imagine how that type of statement would be received by a wider electorate. It's just as the wrong, any type of statement made by a Republican that assumes that gay people need to change or that they're sick needs to be condemned by us, and we plan to be far more aggressive in doing that.
Mr. Eftering, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'll come back anytime. I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about.
Excellent. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Observer Radio, a half-hour news show from the folks at the Texas Observer. If you were looking for a sweet road trip with an extraterrestrial bent earlier in the year, you might have ended up at the Del Rio UFO Festival like our own Patrick Michaels. Several border towns are attempting to draw tourists by capitalizing on long-forgotten UFO crash sites along the Rio Grande. Here to enlighten us with some knowledge is author and UFO researcher Noe Torres. Welcome to the show, Noe.
Yes, thank you very much, Jonathan. I'm very honored to be on the show and happy to talk to you today about our conferences.
Well, I think for starters, Patrick, can you give us a little rundown on your story about the Del Rio UFO Festival?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was a great weekend I got to spend in Del Rio. And it was in January. It was the inaugural Del Rio UFO Festival. And I'd heard about the festivals. I believe it was the one in Presidio that was the first one I'd heard about. And I was thinking, you know, in the back of my mind, well, maybe I'm going to go see that festival again when it comes around. And that one was months away, right. But I was surprised to learn that there was one in Del Rio coming up really soon. And then I saw, well, there's one in Laredo, and there's been one in Edinburgh too. And so I was thinking, well, that's amazing that we have all of these new UFO festivals started within the last few years.
It's quite a lot.
And they're all along the border. And so I reached out to the folks who put it on, and it turned out that they're all put together from the same group of folks, and Noe Torres here is one of the organizers, and I'll just say that it was a really interesting experience to be there because you know, it brought in some you know, leading UFO researchers who put on you know, very sort of serious and research-based and scientific looks at you know, some of the major UFO research that's been out there. Mm-hmm. and government reports that are in various degrees of you know, confidentiality at this point.
Right.
And then a lot of folks from town who showed up with alien costumes and little bobblehead alien things on and hung out for the whole Saturday in the movie theater downtown and listened to these lectures and then went to the park afterwards and had a good time. And the other thing that made this work out was that there were tourism boards in each of these cities that were interested in sort of rebranding and finding new draws for folks, especially at a time when the drug war has scared a lot of people generally, and there's the sense that towns along the Texas-Mexico border are dangerous or not
right.
Places to visit, which, you know, folks are telling me was, you know, just not the case, and the statistics bear that out.
Mm-hmm.
But you saw things like the Laredo is Safe campaign. They have those billboards all around the state. So folks in the tourism boards were finding these UFO festivals to be more positive and sort of upbeat sort of ways to bring people in and who are curious about this kind of stuff. So Noe, I was interested in if you could just sort of talk a little bit about how you got started putting on a UFO festival in the first place, because when we spoke before, it sounded like this wasn't necessarily something you imagined yourself doing, with your spare time.
Back in about 2007 or 2008, Ruben and Uriarte, my co-author and friend from California, and I had just published our first book that we collaborated on called Mexico's Roswell, which was the story of a reported UFO crash, mid-air collision between a plane out of El Paso International Airport that is said to have struck a UFO and gone down near Presidio, Texas. And that's the reason we started holding the Presidio UFO conference annually, because of that event. Well, anyway, we had just issued that book. We had been invited to speak at the annual UFO conference in Roswell, New Mexico, which, by the way, is the world's most well-known and probably the most popular UFO festival in the world. Mm-hmm. So Ruben and I were invited to speak at the UFO Museum in Roswell, New Mexico, 5 years running. Five consecutive years, we were featured speakers there at the summer festival that they hold every year during the 4th of July weekend. So, a lot of times we found ourselves sitting together at meals with some of the other UFO researchers and talking about what a neat idea it is to have a UFO festival. We'd spend a lot of time there after the first 2 or 3 years. We got to know a lot of people. And my thought at the time was, wouldn't it be cool to bring this idea to Texas? And specifically because I live in the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas, I was thinking of starting something up down here. So that's how it all began. But the other interesting thing about it is that while we were in Roswell, we really enjoyed the environment that the city of Roswell puts out for these festivals. I mean, it is family friendly. My expectation going there for the very first time was that this was going to be weirdo central. You know what I mean? Everybody wearing tinfoil hats and dressed up in green paint and stuff. And it wasn't like that at all. You have some silliness going on, people having a good time and enjoying themselves, dressed up in costumes and stuff. We had a granny in a wheelchair, dressed up like an ET with antenna and all that in the parade. Stuff like that. It's fun, it's good, it's family friendly, and it's something very enjoyable. So that was a concept that we wanted to bring to Texas. And it just so happened that the first city with which this idea struck a responsive chord was Laredo. And in 2010, we did our very first UFO conference here in South Texas, and that was in Laredo.
One of the things that I loved in Del Rio was that there was this crash site just on the other side of the river into Mexico, and this was in the mid-50s. Is that right, Noe?
That's right. The aviator involved in the case, Robert Willingham, is not 100% clear on the exact date of the incident, but based on his service records and other military documents that we looked at regarding his time when he was with the Air Force Reserve, we estimate that the crash happened in the spring of 1955, and it happened actually closest to Langtree, Texas. In fact, he said that, it really piqued our interest when we first talked to him, because he said, where the Judge Roy Bean exhibit is, right? And I said, yeah, we had been out there. And he said, well, you can just go walk straight down from the Langtree Judge Roy Bean exhibit that the state has their transportation department. You can just walk right straight to the river, and it happened right across on the other side. There's kind of a plateau there. We checked out his story. We spent about 2 years compiling data, verifying his facts, and we published a book called The Other Roswell, So the folks in Del Rio became interested, and we had actually gone down there a couple of times before we actually had our first UFO festival there this past January. And they've been really wonderful. They really rolled out the red carpet for us.
If you're listening to this episode on TexasObserver.org, you may have time to visit the UFO Festival in Edinburgh this weekend. Otherwise, I'm afraid it'll be a little bit too late, and you'll have to wait till next time. But can we talk about what's likely to happen there? Who's going to show up as guests? What's going to be talked about?
The UFO conference in Edinburgh, like our other UFO festivals, we're trying to bring down some of the top people in the field of UFO research. And we have Dr. Kevin Randall, who has written over 100 books and is recognized as being one of the original Roswell UFO crash investigators. He has written a number of books about Roswell, and he is affiliated with the UFO Museum in Roswell, and he speaks there on a regular basis. So he's one of the gentlemen who has also helped Ruben Uriarte, myself, with the publication of our books. He's a wealth of knowledge about UFO cases in general. And so he's going to be a fascinating speaker. He's just published another book called The Government UFO Secrets, Government UFO Conspiracies. And he's going to talk about that Saturday morning. And then Saturday evening, he has the keynote speech, which is his experience of over 20 years of looking into the Roswell UFO crash itself. So he's going to talk about the truth about the Roswell UFO crash.
Well, Noe Torres, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yes, thank you for having me, and I look forward to talking to you guys in the future.
Excellent.
Great. Thanks, Noe.
For more on UFO festivals in or near the Rio Grande, you can read Aliens Without Borders on TexasObserver.org. We've unfortunately reached the end of this episode, but before we go, I'd like to thank Rosie and the Ramblers for providing our music. And of course, a big thanks goes to all of you out there listening to us. Observer Radio is recorded at the lovely Co-op Radio Studios in Austin, Texas. Our sound engineer is Tracy Schulz. For more Texas news and culture, you can visit us on the web at TexasObserver.org, or you can pick up the latest copy of the Texas Observer at a store near you. We'll talk to you again next time on Observer Radio.